So here we are in the first week and the first Sabbath of May. I wrote a note out to my church leaders last week and I said, who'd have thought we'd be here in this state? Again, there's many blessings, as Mr. Holmes pointed out, that we still have. We've had gorgeous days. The weather's kind of been up and down, warm and cold, but the sun's been out. I've been very happy to see that. And so, but here we are already zooming past Passover and the days of unleavened bread. Could anyone here or out there say that this is where you and I would be on the second day of May, spring of 2020? Who would have thought? We didn't receive the same type of forecast that God gave to Abraham. I'd like to start out with a scripture today. Let's go back to Genesis chapter 15. Didn't give us the same information. Now, he does give us information about the future. We know not every detail, but God's given a lot to us to understand. But here's one interesting thing that comes out of the book of Genesis. Chapter 15, verse 3. Abraham brought up and said, "Behold, you have given no children, and lo, one born in my house." That was of Abram's servants, is mine heir. You know, that came out of, obviously, his servant Hagar. Verse 4 says, "And behold, the word of the Lord came to him, saying, this will not be your heir, but he that will come forth out of your own bowels will be your heir." And you remember the what happened there. That was a very interesting experience that took place with Abraham and Sarah. Sarah even giggled. No, and God had to point out, no, you did laugh, didn't you? You did laugh. And he said, this will not be your heir, but that will come out of your own bowels will be your heir. And he brought him forth and said, look now toward heaven and tell the stars if you're able to number them. And he said to him, so will your descendants be. And it says, Abram believed in the Lord, and he counted it to him for righteousness. Now, very interesting, because this is the title of my sermon today, Defining Your Moments. This was really a defining moment for Abraham, wasn't it? Could you imagine being out there and being called by God to leave your family, which was one of the first trials he went through, because you really have to understand those times that you are in. Here we are, safe and protected in our own homes, in our own communities. We feel pretty safe. You know, sometimes you have neighborhood watches and things like that. Back then, when you had, you know, thieves and raiders that would go out, you were protected by your extended family and servants. You had a lot of servants. You probably had a lot of family that you were protected by. And when God told Abraham, I want you to leave your family, there was a faith aspect of God's protection that had to be there. So that was kind of number one when you look at what Abram had to go through. And then, of course, this was one in a sense where Abram did that. And for some reason, Abraham chose to believe God. There are those that don't choose that. As again pointed out, that faith and trust in God, even when it comes to this virus that we're going through right now. So he believed in the Lord, and he counted to him for righteousness. This was a defining moment for Abraham. We all have our defining moments as well, and I'd like to talk about those in the time to come as well. He said to Abram, know of a certainty, in verse 13, know of a certainty that your descendants will be a stranger in a land that is not theirs and will serve them, and they will afflict them for 400 years. And also that nation whom they will serve I will judge, and afterward they will come out with great substance, and you will go to your fathers in peace. You will be buried in a good old age. Wow, pleasing words to hear. I wish I could hear those. You will go to your fathers in peace. I mean, it's kind of scary in a sense to think about going to my fathers anyway. I never thought really about going to my fathers. But the older that you get, you think about going to your fathers. It's very interesting. You know, here I know is my grandfather and grandma, who I knew, loved very well. We used to go to cemeteries together and look at their my descendants there, and then they passed away, and then my parents passed away, and then my brother passed away, and I said, wow, this is incredible. I said, I'm on deck. And somebody goes, no, you're at the plate. And referring to the baseball game. And I thought really of that. Somebody told me this week or last week, I believe it was, that, wow, I got there in retirement. You probably out there knew what I'm talking about. And said, you know, I only have so many more years. And when he counted up and he said the number, I just thought, that's not a lot of years. You know, when you're at this age, when God gives you 70 and I'll be 63 June 1st, that's 7 years. That 7 years? And if he decides to give me a few more, now it's encouraging that my grandfather lived to be 98. If I've got some of those genes, but maybe I don't want to live to be 98. I don't know. But it's something to really think about. But the time that we have left here, remember when Hezekiah asked God for some more years? And God gave him, what, 15 years? Well, how many 15 years have gone by? He could ask for 15 more and 15 more and 15 more. Probably 1,000 times or more he could ask for 15 more. All right, I'll give you 15 more. But you're still going to die. How about 15 more? Okay, I'll give you those too. Come on, there's got to be a time where 15 is going to be up and that's it. And Hezekiah has been dead for a long, long time. This is the reality of the times that we... But he gave to him that encouragement. You go to your fathers in peace. Wow, that was kind of neat. The blessings that God gave to Abraham, and you'll be buried in a good old age, but the forecasting that he did this, and all of a sudden, we've just celebrated or observed these events just under a month ago, that this happened. It was forecasted way before this actually happened. And then you see what took place with Joseph, how he was sold into slavery. That set up that whole scenario to happen. And all of a sudden you got a Pharaoh that didn't know him anymore. And of course they went into bondage slavery just as God predicted. And we observed that. We celebrated that just about a month ago. What happened? What happened after they came out? We read the encouraging news that they came out with a high hand and they came out with great substance as they spoiled the Egyptians. God had all that unfold before them. Let's look back at what happened in Exodus chapter 13. Exodus 13. These weren't very good defining moments for a group of people. In fact, so many of them were quite embarrassing. They weren't good defining moments. And we're seeing a lot of these testimonies as we go through them. These that took place, Exodus 13 and verse 14. So it will be when your son asks you in the time to come in saying, what is this? That you shall say, by strength of the hand of the Lord, the God brought us out of Egypt, out of the house of bondage. So they were supposed to pass that on to their children. We do the same thing now. There was a bypass situation that took place because they didn't continue to teach their children that. Their children had no idea. Our children today, if they're not being taught, by the way, even on how this country was founded, how this country was based on the Bible, how this country was based on the Ten Commandments. And some of our children don't even know the four figures on Mount Rushmore. The history has not been taught. It's very frustrating. So you can see the same pattern throughout the ages. It wasn't just the Israelites. It's us today as well. Continuing on, it came to pass when Pharaoh was stubborn about letting us go that the Lord killed all the firstborn in the land of Egypt, both the firstborn of man and the firstborn of animal. Therefore I sacrifice to the Lord all males that open the womb, but all the firstborn of my sons I redeem. It shall be as a sign on your hand. It will be as frontlets between your eyes, for by strength of the hand the Lord brought us out of Egypt. So there was something about that firstborn that God had them do as a reminder of what took place in Egypt, and that was supposed to be passed on. Do you know they would teach their son that you're my firstborn, dedicated to God, redeemed by God as the firstborn? Something very special about that. Continuing on, in verse 18, then it came to pass when the Pharaoh had let the people go that God did not lead them by the way of the land of the Philistines, although that was near, for God said, lest perhaps the people change their minds when they see war and return to Egypt. So now you know some of God's thoughts as to why he did what he did. He led them in a way that they didn't totally understand. Did you ever felt sometimes that you were being led in a way that you couldn't figure out or didn't understand, and you realize it all goes back to God? This is for us today. We can see that today. And Moses took some of the bones of Joseph with him, verse 19, for he had placed the children of Israel under solemn oath, saying, God will surely visit you or inquire of you that has this been done, and you will carry up my bones from here with you. So they took their journey from Succoth and camped in Etham at the edge of the wilderness. And the Lord went before them by day in a pillar of cloud to lead the way, and by night in a pillar of fire to give them light so as to go by day and by night. He did not take away the pillar of cloud by day or the pillar of fire by night from before the people. Let's go back and visit that one again. You're 400 years in slavery. By that time, the people, that's all they knew. They didn't know anything about freedom. By the time you get to the end of 400 years, that's all you've ever known. And so what part of God got carried on when you were in Egypt? I would say probably little bit. How many people practiced the way of God back then? Probably very few. You didn't have the Bible that was written yet, did you? There were no scriptures. There was only stories that may have been passed on. These people were ignorant to God. They were afraid. They were fearful. Because look what happened. Yeah, you're telling me we're leaving, and then we're not. We're leaving, then we're not. We're leaving, then we're not. Although they did see so many different things happen that didn't happen to them, the people at Goshen, remember, weren't afflicted by some of those things. And so, but this is what they saw as they came out of Egypt. This is what they watched. So they weren't the people that are strong in faith, but look what God did for them to help strengthen them. I mean, could you imagine going out and taking a walk by night and there's a little pillar of fire that's guiding you? You know, a cloud by the day? I mean, imagine that too. God gave them a lot so he could bless them and they could, their faith could grow as well. They didn't do well with much of that, did they? Chapter 14, now we come to the Red Sea. Now, as you all know in the recount of that, did they do well with that? Chapter 14 and verse 10. And when Pharaoh drew near, the children of Israel lifted their eyes, and behold, the Egyptians marched after them, so they were very afraid, and the children of Israel cried out to the Lord. Well, you know, in one sense, you could understand that, couldn't you? Pharaoh's coming after you with his armies now, and you're going back and looking at, well, they said we were going to go, then we couldn't go, then we could go, then we couldn't go, but there's the pillar of fire, and there's the cloud. And so there's this maybe torn feeling in a sense, because now, so they're not used to being relying on God. They're not used to that. God is trying to help them grow in their faith, but they're still not doing very well with us. Verse 11, and that's their attitudes. You can see the attitudes. They said to Moses, because there were no graves in Egypt, have you taken us to die in the wilderness? Why have you so dealt with us to bring us up out of Egypt? Is this not the word that we told you in Egypt, saying, let us alone, that we may serve the Egyptians? For it would have been better for us to serve the Egyptians that we should die in the wilderness. Not a very good response, was it? Now, you could see it differently. Maybe if they said, you know, Moses, we've seen God bring us through. We've seen God intervene for us. We've seen the pillar, but we're still troubled by this. Can we get some encouragement? Can you appeal to God? Can we appeal to God? Instead, you get the complaining and murmuring. And so Moses said to the people, verse 13, don't be afraid, stand still and see the salvation of the Lord, which he will accomplish for you today. For the Egyptians whom you see, you will see again no more forever. The Lord will fight for you and you will hold your peace. Bring it up to bring it up to modern day times. We're going to go to that scripture, but I want to take us through a few more here because defining moments. Defining moment for God, for sure. Wow, defining moment. The miracles that he provided. This is God. He's the one that did the pillar of fire by night, the cloud by day. This is the God who opened the Red Sea for millions of people and animals to walk through, and the miracle it would take to do that. Not so good of a defining moment for the Israelites. Pretty embarrassing if they're going to be resurrected and look back and go, you know, we didn't handle that one very well. Chapter 15, here's where you get. Now they get brought through the Red Sea, and now they're celebrating, go, oh, this is great, this is so wonderful, look what God did for us. And you get to verse 22. So Moses brought the Israel from the Red Sea. When they went out into the wilderness of Shur, they went out 3 days in the wilderness and found no water. When they came to Marah, they couldn't drink the water of Marah, for they were bitter. So that's what they named it, Marah, meaning bitter. And the people murmured against Moses, saying, well, what are we going to drink? And it says they murmured. They didn't implore. They didn't come to him with meekness. They murmured again. So he cried out to the Lord, for the Lord showed him a tree. When he cast it into the waters, the waters were made sweet. And he made a statute and ordinance for them, and there he tested them and said, if you diligently heed the voice of the Lord your God to do what is right in his sight, listen to his commandments, keep his statutes, I will put none of the diseases on you which I have brought on the Egyptians, for I am the Lord who heals you. So here's another one, defining moment. God's intervention, once again. Do you think that they could get it by that time? Did they understand it by that time? They still didn't. Chapter 16. Every chapter brings us something new. There's some kind of celebration. Everybody's okay. Then the test comes before them again, and there's more murmuring and more complaining. Chapter 17, verse 1. All the congregation of the Israel set out on a journey from the wilderness of Sin, according to the commandment of the Lord, camped in Rephidim. But there was no water for the people to drink. Therefore, the people contended with Moses. Look at the words that are used: contention. And said, give us water that we may drink. And Moses said, why do you contend with me? And why do you tempt the Lord? And the people thirsted there for water. And the people murmured against Moses and said, why is it you brought us up out of Egypt to kill us with our children and our livestock with thirst? Did they forget the pillar of fire by night, the cloud by day, the Red Sea, the waters at Marah? What happened? I guess they did. Verse 4, Moses cried out to the Lord, saying, what shall I do with these people? They are almost ready to stone me. And the Lord said to Moses, go on before the people and take with you some of the elders of Israel. Also take your rod, which you struck the river, and go. Behold, I will stand before you there on the rock in Horeb, and you will strike the rock, and the water will come out of it that the people may drink. And Moses did so in the sight of the elders of Israel. And he called the name of the place Massah and Meribah because of the contention and the testing of Israel, because they tempted the Lord, saying, is the Lord among us or not? Why is this written for us today? When we see the things that are taking place, and I believe it was Mr. Meeker that mentioned that this seems to be a type of prelude. It's not the worst thing that we're going to ever see. It's been bad, but it's not the worst thing. As we know, God has given us some insight and foresight to see some of the things that are ahead of us as well. It's not looking really good. Are we going to be able to see, after all that God has brought us through as well, that we're going to forget and say the same thing? Where is the Lord God? When all these things happen around us, has that question come to people's mind? Where is God? What's going on? What's taking place here? We're seeing some of the same examples. These are all brought up to our time as well. Let's go to chapter 19. I'm sorry, this is verse 19. Where is it? I think I got chapter 19, verse 31. Yes, chapter 19 can't be. I've got that written wrong in here somewhere. 19, verse 19 of chapter 17. No, it's not there. Let's go to chapter 18. Chapter 18, it's got to be verse 19. Yes. Listen now, my voice, I will give you counsel. And God will be with you. Stand before God for the people, that you may bring the difficulties, and you will teach them the statutes and the laws, and show them the way in which they must walk and the work they must do. And it shows how he used the people there to, instead of taking all the judgment upon himself that Jethro, his father-in-law, shared with him that. Let's go to That's why I had that written. When you go to chapter 19, I'm sorry, through verse 31, that's why I had that written down. From chapter 19, verse 31, you see all of the laws and the commandments and the statutes being delivered to the people. That's why I'd written that down. Chapters 19 through verse 31, God lays out all of his laws. Now, don't forget, Moses went up there for 40 days and 40 nights. Here's what our thinking. This is what my thinking was when I grew up knowing about the Ten Commandments and the two tablets that God gave to him. I didn't know that he broke, Moses was angry and broke the tablets. So I know that there was another set that was made. But Moses was instructed to teach the people not just Ten Commandments. All of the laws. You look at chapters 19 through chapters 31, you see all of the laws and all of the commandments and all the statutes that God had to give to Moses. Now, the question that I have is he didn't have a computer. He didn't have, it said two tablets with 10 commandments. He had to cause Moses to remember chapters 19 through verse 31 that were written down, didn't he? That's a lot of laws and judgments. So why was Moses up there for 40 days and 40 nights? Now, it doesn't say, but that would be a pretty good gander, wouldn't it? That'd be a pretty good guess at why he did that. But then, after all that, you get to chapter 32. What happens? While Moses is being given that, they're making a golden calf. Israel was relentless on departing from God's ways. Just relentless. Their defining moments were not very good, were they? Now, you get moments where people stood up, and you had defining moments of Joshua and Caleb. You had defining moments of Moses. You had a lot of those defining moments on the very good side. Israelites, not too well. God did all these things to prove, to test his chosen people. That same God of the Old Testament, revealed in Hebrews chapter 13, verse 8, as Jesus Christ, the same yesterday, today, and forever. He's the same pattern. Just as he tested them, when he calls you and I, do you think that we're not going to be tested? Same thing. So we will see testing in our lives, and it's not always easy. But how do we respond to it? Exodus chapter 16 and verse 4. Exodus 16 and verse 4. Let's look at what God said about this. Exodus chapter 16 and verse 4, the Lord said to Moses, "Behold, I will rain bread from heaven for you, and the people will go out and gather a certain quota every day that I may test them whether they will walk in my law or not." Very interesting test. Chapter 20 and verse 20, so we found out that this was the Sabbath test. He said, "Hey, you can gather all this and don't gather anything on the Sabbath." What did some people do? Very bad defining moments, weren't they? God was testing them as to how they would keep his Sabbath day. Do you think God tests his people today and how they keep his Sabbath day? We certainly don't have the manna, but we certainly have a lot of other things. How do we keep it? Chapter 20 and verse 20. Moses said to the people, "Do not fear, for God has come to test you, and that his fear may be before you, so that you may not sin." So the testing he does for us is to help us is that we don't sin anymore. We have our defining moments, and sometimes those defining moments aren't always the best. When we look back at our lives, I look back and I see some defining moments that I go, some were good defining moments, but there were not so good defining moments in all of our lives. There were not very good defining moments in Israel. Never have been. Deuteronomy chapter 8. Deuteronomy chapter 8 and verse 2. Deuteronomy chapter 8 and verse 2. "You shall remember that the Lord your God led you the way these 40 years in the wilderness to humble you, to test you, and to know what was in your heart, whether you would keep his commandments or not. He humbled you, allowed you to hunger, fed you with manna, which you did not know, nor did your fathers know." They don't know where that came from. When you see, if you woke up in the morning and saw manna on your grass, I mean, you know, this had to be, when you look at the type of manna that it was, just some small research, nobody knows for certain, but do you think when God gave the manna to Israel that it had every nutrient that the body would need? I mean, that had to be the best, healthiest food. He didn't have to label it non-GMO, gluten-free. Here it was, you just go out, and the only restriction was just you don't gather on the Sabbath. That was it. It had to be the best tasting. And yet, how long before they started to say, we don't appreciate this? That seems to be human nature to a T. He might make you to know, that it says, he might make you to know that man does not live by bread alone, but by every word that proceeds from the mouth of God. So God was testing them. He tests us today as well. After being led by Moses and Joshua, we see Israel being led by the judges. So as you take a trip through memory lane and you keep going, you know, you've got Joshua that took over for Moses. Do you remember? Obviously, most know when Joshua, God says, be strong and of good courage. And I wonder sometimes, did Joshua have to be strong and good courage to go into the land of Canaan to take all these other people out that God says, I'm going to give you this land? Or did he have to be strong and good courage for Israel? I think it was for both. He really had to stand up and be strong. So here's, you get a list of judges as you go through the book of Judges. You got, the first one was named Othniel. He was Caleb's younger brother. And then you can see all the stories for yourself, just like the kings, on whether they were good judges or bad judges. Some of these you won't even recognize. There was Ehud. There was Shamgar. There was Deborah, who was a prophetess. You remember Deborah. You remember Gideon. So you've got some figures here that you remember, some that you don't. Judges chapter 8. Let's go over here to Judges chapter 8. Judges chapter 8 and verse 33. So Gideon was a good judge, as you probably know from the story. It says in verse 33, as it was so, as soon as Gideon was dead, that the children of Israel again played the harlot with the Baals and made Baal-Berith their god. Thus the children of Israel did not remember the Lord their God, who had delivered them from the hands of all of their enemies on every side, nor did they show kindness to the house of Zerubbabel, that is Gideon, in accordance with the good he had done for Israel. So you see that example there. Are we any different today? I don't think so. When I watch the politics of today, I see people that hate, that don't remember God anymore, and it gets worse and worse all the time. And you, probably if you're 50, 60, 70, 80 years old, more than that, that you've seen the progress of our country. It's just gotten worse, just like it did. It's the same thing, just as what happened in Israel. So then you go to Abimelech, as you see a judge that was not a very good judge. In chapter 10, you'll see Tola. In chapter 11, you'll see Jephthah. And then judges named, you probably haven't heard of these, Ibzan, Elon, Abdon. And then after that, you get a judge that you remember, Samson. You remember defining moments for him. He had some good defining moments. He did not have some very good defining moments either. You know, these people we're going to talk to, we're going to be seeing, it's going to be so interesting, because who will be able to go up to Samson and judge him? He was a judge. Who will be able to judge Samson? You know, maybe God will put some flashcards in our life too. Well, remember, we had some bad defining moments as well. In chapter 18 and verse 6, let's go over here to chapter 18 and verse 6. Here, Micah was a judge at that time, not the prophet Micah, chapter 18 and verse 6. I'm sorry, chapter 17, verse 6, correction there, chapter 17, verse 6. It says here, during Micah's time, it says, in those days there was no king in Israel. Everyone did what was right in his own eyes. Are we there today? Everyone does what's right in their own eyes. Haven't you heard it before? Oh, it doesn't matter what somebody does. Hey, that's whatever you do in your bedroom is between you and this other person, whoever it might be. We are certainly at a crossroads where everyone does what's right in their own eyes. It's no different from back then. Chapter 21, you know, Israel almost just wiped out, when you look at the story of how Israel almost wiped out Benjamin. The entire tribe was almost wiped out. chapter 21 and verse 25. In those days, there was no king in Israel. Everyone did what was right in his own eyes. And so you leave the book of Judges and you go on to the prophets and the kings. Another segment showing how this all worked out. Because if you remember in 1 Samuel chapter 8, when Samuel was the prophet before God and leading Israel at that time, 1 Samuel chapter 8. 1 Samuel chapter 8. Now, this is fascinating because this is brought up to today, too. When you get around July 1st, you're going to see something quite incredible, if anybody even remembers the Declaration of Independence anymore. How many kids are being taught that? How many understand and see how many fought for their freedom, and that we take so many of these freedoms for granted today? And that was when God was blessing the United States to become a nation of its own. The miracles that it took place to bring the United States where it is today, and nothing's really changed. 1 Samuel chapter 8, verse 1. Now it came to pass when Samuel was old that he made his sons judges over Israel. The name of his firstborn was Joel, the name of his second Abijah, and they were judges in Beersheba. But his sons did not walk in his ways. They turned aside after dishonest gain, took bribes, and perverted justice. No different from today, again, is it? You read the Old Testament and you see patterns here. They go, wow, we're there today as well. Now the point is here is not that just that this happened, but how they responded to it. All of Israel gathered together and came to Samuel at Ramah, verse 4, and said, look, you're old and your sons do not walk in your ways. Now make for us a king to judge us like all the nations. But it displeased Samuel when they said, give us a king to judge us. So Samuel prayed to the Lord, and the Lord said, heed the voice of the people that all that they say to you, for they have not rejected you, but they have rejected me, that I should not reign over them. You would look at that by itself and you would go, yeah, all Samuel's sons, they're all corrupted, they're all perverted. We've got a right to do this, don't we? That's not what God said. Was it impossible for God to take care of that situation? He knew the attitude of these elders who were no better than anybody else. That was the problem. It was the attitude, and God said it. They've not rejected you, they've rejected me. That was the issue, but everybody would focus in on the bad sons. Well, God knew that as well. What could the elders have said? Maybe the elders could have come, you know something, God, we really appreciate Samuel. We appreciate your leadership through him. And yet, you know, as you watch, and we see too, and we've been praying to you about this, that you would change that, that you would help us to not have leadership such as this. What prayer would have been acceptable to God in the attitude, and yet their hearts were set on living the way everybody else did? They saw everybody else had a king, we want a king too. So what God say? And the following verses, he goes, hey, tell them they're going to get a king, but tell them what they're going to get from this king. And what's fascinating about it, when you look at the Declaration of Independence, the complaints that go against the oppressive king that our writers of the Constitution, the writers of the Declaration had, the king has done this, the king has done this, the king has taxed us beyond, the king has done this. All the Declaration says this. And God said back here, by the way, tell them if they get a king that this is what he's going to do. And you bring it all up to modern day, and that's exactly what happened. But now, we don't have a king, do we? We've got a president, and we have got people say the right to vote. So you vote your guy into office, and then you complain and murmur about him because he can't do anything right. Or you vote your elected officials into office, and they can't do anything right. But if people would just get in that I want to be in, then things would go okay, wouldn't they? Or are we looking to God and saying, God, speed your kingdom because we're making a real mess out of this? We see from the testimonies of how you worked with the leaders, they rejected Moses, they rejected Joshua, they rejected the judges were bad, the kings were bad, the priests, some of them were bad, but this is what the people wanted. So God gave them what they wanted. He gives us what we want now, and yet we go down complaining about it again, murmuring about it. It's no different, is it? Same thing. These people, judges, kings, priests, prophets, all had their defining moments. Very interesting, one of the most wicked kings of Israel. Do you remember who that was? He was also named after, not named after, this guy came after him, written by Herman Melville. Do you remember the guy in Moby Dick? Captain Ahab. This was King Ahab. King Ahab was known as probably the worst kings ever, and yet he had a defining moment. He actually fasted before God, and God looked down upon this wicked king and go, look how Ahab humbles himself before me. God knows the heart, knows the attitude, so this was true. You had the most wicked king that humbled himself before God, and God blessed him and said, "It's not the kingdom's not going to come down in your time because of what you did. It's going to come down after you." The mercy of God is incredible. Just incredible. They all had their defining moments, though. Let's go to 1 Corinthians chapter 10 before we bring it up to today. 1 Corinthians chapter 10. 1 Corinthians chapter 10. And for those that listened, this is part of what I got out of Mr. Johnson's sermon today, that he went back to the Old Testament and then went to 1 Corinthians 10. I said, that's exactly what I'm doing. So I don't know if it's going to differ from that, but I go, I'm wearing the same tie. So 1 Corinthians chapter 10, so if we're walking the same way, that's got to be hopefully God's Spirit leading us. 1 Corinthians chapter 10, verse 1, moreover, brethren, I do not want you to be unaware that our fathers were under the cloud, passed through the sea, all were baptized to Moses in the cloud, in the sea, all ate that same spiritual food, ate and drank the same spiritual drink, for they drank of that spiritual rock that followed them, and that rock was Christ. But with most of them, God was not well pleased, for their bodies were scattered in the wilderness. Now these became our examples to the intent that we should not lust after evil things, as they also lusted, and do not become idolaters, as were some of them. As it is written, the people sat down to eat and drink and rose up to play. What's ahead of us in the future, before the return of Christ? People are going to sit down, rise up to play. Marry and give in marriage. This will all be taking place. Let us not commit sexual immorality as some of them did, and one day 23,000 fell. Nor let us tempt Christ as some of them did and were destroyed by serpents. Nor murmur as some of them also murmured and were destroyed by the destroyer. All these things happened to them as examples, and they were written for our admonition, on whom the end of the ages have come. We're that far into the step now. There we go. This is now, we're coming to the end of the age. This is where we're at. Therefore, let him who thinks he stands take heed lest he fall. I got this down, in other words. I've been through this. I've got this one down. I know how to handle this. Or do we humbly come before God and God going, God, I don't even know, run my own life. Help me to have defining moments that are pleasing to you, because we go through these tests all the time. And we don't always do so well, individually and even as a church. The testimonies are for us in these modern days as well. You know, a couple of weeks ago, my wife and I had the opportunity to go for a walk away from home. And there was a cemetery that had a path. It was on a little hill. And so we said, well, let's go for a walk through this cemetery. The cemetery lot. Very interesting, because it reminded me of something I'd like to share with you today as well. Interesting thing, I've done this before, and as I said, my grandparents used to take me to see the headstones in the Bark River, Michigan cemetery up in the Upper Peninsula, and I saw my great-grandparents, and they would point that out. And I remember one time when we went to camp, my grandma had already died, and she was the one with my grandpa. Every time we went up there in the summer, we would go visit that site and see some of the broken stones that were there. I mean, this was a very old cemetery. And I remember coming through that area to go to a youth camp one time, and I was at the cemetery itself, and I called my mom, who was in Florida. I go, Mom, I'm standing at the grave of Grandma right now. I mean, who in the world would thought that you'd be able to do something like that? It's fascinating to see that, where the technology has taken us today. But then you look at all these stones, as we did. We talked about some of the stones and the family names that were there, some named after traits like Mason or something else. We saw some unusual names as well. That brings the one to me. I was looking for this one tombstone. I didn't see it there. So I'm going to share this with you today. It says, many years ago, a couple gave birth to a son. They named him Odd. When Odd began going to school, all of his classmates teased him because of his name. He finally graduated and got a factory job, and once again, all of his co-workers would poke fun at his name. Finally, he got married and lived and worked at a farm since he could not take being around people teasing him about his name. When he became 50 years old, he told his wife that he was fed up from going through life with his name. He told her when he died that he would end it. No one would ever make fun of him again. He requested that his wife would not put his name on his headstone, only the date he was born and the date he died. About 20 years later, the poor farmer died. His wife wanted to honor his wishes and purchased his headstone with no name engraved, just the date he was born and the date he died. Today, when mourners visit the cemetery, they walk by, look at his headstone, and see there's no name on the headstone. And they always say, "Isn't that odd?" He couldn't win for losing. You know, interesting on the serious note of this, though, as you go through, it really brings a moment when you see there are people here, whether they were born. We kind of go, this was a cemetery that went back to the 1800s. I didn't see anything in the 1700s, but this was an 1800s and up cemetery. You saw some of the old, and the names, and you see the dates that were there. And I would calculate how old they were, and all different ages. There was one that was 5 years old. There were those in their 20s. There were those in their 90s. I don't think anybody was over 100. There probably were. We didn't go to every gravestone that was there. But it was so interesting looking at that and seeing that these people had lives. They once lived. And there was something in between those dates, wasn't there, that you see. We'll talk about that in a minute, too. It's very interesting, but I brought up a picture today. This was before my time. You can't see this, I don't believe, but I'm going to show you this. If you can see a picture, this is my mom and dad before my age. So if you can even comprehend that, I was not even born at this time yet. So they were younger than me, and you look back and go, wow. And I've seen a lot of pictures as you come into people's homes. They've got pictures of their grandparents when they were kind of in their, what they call their prime. And I've seen a lot of people that you go, wow, they were really nice looking people. You know, and of course, everyone wants to be nice looking. That's why they take pictures when they're nice looking. And so, and you keep those. But, you know, this is what you see, and it brings back the memories. You know, these, by the way, right here, these were moments in time. This was a time when my dad sat to pose. He was living. He was breathing. Mom, too. That was a frozen moment in time. It's very interesting to see. They existed. They were. That took place. And now they're no longer. And it's because of what we know, it's not sad to me. This is life. This is what happens. I was able to go back, I believe it was last week, someone went back onto a site and looked at the historical record of the Evans name. And I couldn't believe all the pictures. I believe one of my relatives had probably looked into this and had to submit it, but I saw information that I didn't know. I saw my great-great-grandparents. I saw their names. There was an Isaac Evans. There's a lot of Evan Evanses that were in there. I saw where my heritage. I don't have to do a DNA because I went back far enough to see, yeah, Mom was right. When she said we're Swedish, my grandpa was a full-blooded Swede. His name was Anderson. Swedish, Scotch, Welsh, and German. So I was able to see where all these families came from. I don't know this, but in going back, I found out that, frankly, we're all related. I thought about Mr. Holmes being up there. I'm going, I'm related to him. When you go back far enough, we're all related, aren't we? How far is this real or is this not real? We all go back. You keep going back. Go, wow, look at him. And go, then they married them and they married them. who knows, if you go back to Joshua, you go back to Ehud, you go back to a bad guy, do you go back to a good guy? You know, we all go back to Noah, though. We're all related. You remember this guy? Chapter 9 of Genesis. Let's go back here and see what's said about this man, because you really can't forget it. As God, it's not possible to forget this because of what God has done. Genesis chapter 9 and verse 13. Genesis 9, verse 13. God said, I set my rainbow in the cloud, and it shall be for the sign of the covenant between me and the earth. It shall be when I bring a cloud over the earth that the rainbow will be seen in the cloud, and I'll remember my covenant which is between me and you and every living creature of all flesh. The waters will never again become a flood to destroy all flesh. The rainbow will be in the cloud, and I will look on it to remember the everlasting covenant between God and every living creature of the flesh that's on the earth. And God said to Noah, this is the sign of the covenant which I have established between me and all flesh that's on the earth. So do you know from what it says here, and God keeps his word, that when you see a rainbow, you're looking at the same rainbow that God is looking at right now. That's what he said. I wanted to pass that on one time. We had our preteen camp, and there was rain in the distance. And there were actually, I believe, two beautiful, beautiful rainbows. And I used that as a moment in time, sat the campers down. I go, do you know what that means? It's not just a pretty rainbow and all the chemicals and how that happens to make all the different colors. That's what God set back in Genesis. That's what takes place. A lot of the world just looks at it as rain coming through the sun, and that's how that gets to be there. God made that happen. That's something that's important before God. That's a reminder of who God is and what he did through this individual that, frankly, all of us go back to, Noah. These moments in time. So I'm going to read a poem today. Some of you have heard this poem. It's called The Dash. It's by Linda Ellis. The moment in time, because we're living moments in time here right now. This is a moment in time. Nobody ever thought this would happen. But it's a moment in time. I don't think we'll probably forget this. It's hard to forget something like this that takes place. Do you remember when we all had to go back in and keep the Sabbath in our own homes? I read of a man who stood to speak at the funeral of a friend. He referred to the dates on the tombstone from the beginning to the end. He noted that first came the date of birth and spoke the following date with tears. But he said what mattered most of all was the dash between those years. For that dash represents all the time that they spent alive on earth, and now only those who love them know what that little line is worth. For it matters not how much we own, the cars, the house, the cash. What matters is how we live and love and how we spend our dash. So think about this long and hard. Are there things you'd like to change? For you never know how much time is left that can still be rearranged. If we could just slow down enough to consider what's true and real and always try to understand the way other people feel and be less quick to anger, and show appreciation more and love the people in our lives like we've never loved before. If we treat each other with respect, more often wear a smile, remembering this little special dash might only last a little while. So when your eulogy is being read with your life's actions to rehash, would you be proud of the things they say about how you spent your dash? Very provocative poem, isn't it? When we think about that. Just like when you stop for a while, as God has us do on the Sabbath day, to consider all these things that we've read before, but how much do we really, as I know it was mentioned by Mr. Horchak in one of his sermons, how much do we chew on these? Do we really think about the importance, or this will be a time that just goes by and we continue on, you know, not really doing anything different, not defining our moments in time? Who are those that you would think of in the Bible that would be maybe happy about their moments in time? There's one that was obviously perfect, that lived a perfect moment in time, and that was Jesus Christ. I mean, his moment defined birth only lived, 30, 31 years. You know, you look at that and go, wow, just 31 years. He never saw older age, but his moment was sure defined. You had others from the very beginning. You had both good and bad. Went through some bad kings. You remember some good kings? Can you define some good kings? You know, Josiah was a good king. Hezekiah, there were very few good kings, by the way. There were a lot of evil ones. So those are all defined back then. Then you bring it up to the New Testament and who defines their moments in time. When you think about the disciples who became apostles that have their positions set for the future, they had some good moments in time, but they were preceded by some not so good moments in time. You know, all of us before we were baptized or all came to the knowledge of repentance, we ask God to take those moments in time and please take them away. They've all been forgiven. So when we think about that, and I think, well, I had some moments in time a long time ago, but they've all been forgiven. God says he remembers them no more. We're trying to define good moments in our life. We live in a time where moments are being defined right now through how we process, how we look at information that we're receiving right now. Just for a little while here, I'd like you to meet the not-bees. Will and may not be, I decided to call them. These define our moments. And so I thought I'd share a few with them. Defining moments is how we're to live, because when God asked Moses, he said, I want you to set before them my commandments and my statutes. And so you go through all those, and then you go through the New Testament, and you see more of these things that are being defined. Christ was said one thing when he was teaching about leadership. This is one thing we're able to murmur about, I mean, so murmured about today. You know, anybody that would be in a public office, I wonder sometimes how you can sustain that. Because somebody's going to look for the worst in you. They're going to try to defeat you. They're going to try to say bad things about you. Nobody in a public office is perfect. Some are corrupt. We certainly do have a lot of corruption. And yet, what do we get from this? To murmur, to complain? You know, what happens? We understand, I've heard people talk about this in our congregations. What do? We know God is the one that puts people in charge. So what does the Bible say? Does it say murmur about these people? Or does it say pray for them, that you can live in peace? Christ said in Matthew chapter 20, let's go to Matthew chapter 20. Matthew chapter 20, this is from the not-be family. You know how the disciples didn't have their greatest defining moments when they were talking about who was going to be better, who was going to be greater? This was certainly a defining moment. When the mother of Zebedee, Matthew chapter 20 and verse 20, the mother of Zebedee's sons came to him with her sons kneeling down and asking something from him. He said, what do you wish? He said, grant you these two sons of mine may sit one on your right hand, the other on the left in your kingdom. Jesus said, Andrew, you have no idea what you're asking of. Are you able to drink the cup that I'm about to drink? Be baptized with the baptism I am baptized with? They said, we are able. They had no idea, did they? They had no idea. He said, you will indeed drink my cup and be baptized with the baptism I am baptized with, but to sit on my right hand and on my left is not mine to give, but it is for those whom it is prepared by my Father. And when the ten heard of it, they were moved with indignation. Not a good defining moment. Did they have reason to be mad? Anybody could have said, yeah, that would have ticked me off totally. Are you kidding me? They're talking about themselves and they're trying to get up the chain of ladder and using their mom to do it? And we're going to let that just pass by and go, no way has that happened. They were mad. Defining moment. And Christ used that as a defining moment, didn't he? He called to them and said, you know that the rulers of the Gentiles lord it over them, and those who are great exercise authority over them. We see it all the time. And we're probably some of the biggest complainers about it, aren't we? Or do we go to God and say, God bless these people, that they would take their corruption away from them. You know, humbly come before God and plead before God instead of all the finger pointing and all the accusations. Satan is using this now as a time to divide more than anything. Talk with somebody about that today. We're at a defining moment here where there's a lot of information. sometimes it's very difficult on how to process this information. Is what they're saying accurate? Are the masks okay? Are they not okay? Is it back and forth? And it's very hard to define that. Some people are very confused by some of the instructions. We do our best to try to go to federal, state, local authorities to see what the rules are, try to figure them out. Then there's all these other sites that say, no, it's a big scam. All this is not, and this is being for all this information. What are we supposed to do about it? And it divides people. And I say, do I believe in conspiracies? Absolutely. Satan is the biggest conspiracist of all. But if I don't know, if I can't find, if I'm going to read one article and that's going to convince me that this is a conspiracy, I'm not a very good judge. That seems to be pretty good. I better spend a lot more time before I make a conclusion on figuring out whether that's really true. And even if it is true, what in the world can I do about it? What is my place as being a light of God? What do I do with that information? Do I use it to divide people? Oh, no, that's just a bunch of baloney. Well, I believe it's true. Well, I don't. And all of a sudden, you see what's happening? Satan's getting in between people to divide. He uses this tactical weapon very effectively. We are in defining moments right now. God used this in Matthew chapter 20. He said, it will not be. There is the not be's. It will not be among you. But whoever desires to become great among you, let him be your servant. And whoever desires to be first among you, let him be your slave, just as the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve and to give his life a ransom for many. Do we totally grasp that and understand that? Because God's going to test and prove us as well. If he's building and wants leaders for his coming kingdom, they're not going to be slouches. We're going to be tested. We're going to be tested thoroughly to see, do they get this point? Can I use them in my coming kingdom to serve other people? Or are they looking for a position? Very interesting. Romans chapter 9 and verse 33. Romans chapter 9 and verse 33, Paul said to the Romans, as it is written, behold, I lay in Zion a stumbling stone and a rock of offense, and whoever believes on him will not be ashamed. There's your not be. And remember, the difference is here, when we believe in Jesus Christ and we believe in God, it's not just saying that we believe in God and Jesus Christ. It's living by every word. Remember, you go back to those Ten Commandments. There weren't just Ten Commandments. Even before that, remember Abraham in Genesis? It said, Abraham obeyed my laws, my commandments, my statutes, and my judgments. How did they get all the way back there? I thought those just came up at the Ten Commandments at the Mount Sinai. No, there's not a whole lot of detail. But you know what? God placed mankind on this earth. He gave them an instruction book. No doubt gave Adam and Eve his laws and his ways. And we don't know how long that took. They were fully instructed with that. Again, there's a lot of detail that we don't know there. But when you read certain scriptures, you get pieces that sometimes you just never thought of before. You see the consistency of God. Galatians chapter 5. There's a lot of not-be's in here, by the way. I'm only going to go through a few more. My time is coming to a close here. But I hope we think about that in light of... No, I don't want to get creepy here at all, but one day I might have a picture, me and my wife here, and my kids will be looking at this. My time will be gone. It goes by so fast. You know, I can say without the knowledge of God and his plan, there'd be a lot of sadness. There'd probably be a lot of murmuring and more complaining. But you know, when you see the years and the lives that God has given, especially to his called people, and how blessed that we've been, are we going to be like the Israelites and forget what he's done for us? I ask sometimes that people would remember to write down, because it's so easy to forget. Sometimes somebody would bring something up and I go, I totally forgot about that. I was doing a baptismal counseling and thinking about my baptism and how I saw two paths. This was just me. I do remember this clearly. I talked to my minister who's not in the church anymore. He left. And I saw two paths distinctly that God had brought me to. And I said, I don't know everything about this. I don't know everything there is to know. Those who get baptized, and even today, we don't know everything. We're still learning and growing. But I saw clearly that path. And I said, that one I don't want to go to. I see what that brings. It was that simple for me. But then what I forgot, until God brought it to my mind, was that I was concerned about the negative things that I had done. You know, when you go through that part of repentance, you can't undo that. You can't fix it. I remember calling a friend one time, it was not too long ago, and I apologized for something that I had done. And they wrote back so kindly and go, you know, we were kids back then. We did some really stupid things. I'm okay. You know, don't worry about it. And it really encouraged me, but that kind of was gnawing at me. Even though I knew I was being forgiven by God, I was sorry for what I had done to this individual. And God says, I've forgiven that. It's gone. We are defining our moments right now and how we live our life. We're learning from those. We're growing. But I said, I saw those negative things. And my minister at that time, he goes, well, how about focusing in on your positives? How about instead of thinking of the negative all the time, focus in on what you do positive. And maybe that will take you away. That will fill that empty glass that we talked about during the days of unleavened bread. Let's finish here in Galatians chapter 6 with the not be's. Oh, look up the not be's. Just type that in, the not be's. You know, as I go there, I'll quote another one here, 1 Peter 4, verse 16. If any suffer as a Christian, let him not be ashamed, but let him glorify God on this behalf. As it's been said before, we are all lights. We are all lights. We're defining moments right now that's important for other people to see. Galatians chapter 6, verse 9. Sometimes this will get tiring, but by the way, this is just an I believe this is totally introductory. How do I know that? Because the prophecies say this is going to get worse. We have no idea right now as far as the financial impact. I can tell you this is not going to be good. If it happens to look good, it looked good in the past and it was never good. For instance, when you're 20 trillion or plus in the debt and the stock market's going up, and I see, oh, look at the stock market. Oh, we're 20 trillion into debt. That takes this way down here, because that doesn't make sense for that to be up there and for that to be up there. And that, what's going on there? You can't. If you ever know about doing a budget, it just doesn't work that way. One day it'll come back to get you. It's happened to other countries. It's going to happen. You see the prophecies. It says people will throw their gold in the streets. So I learned not to trust people. Now is the time to get gold, by the way. How about now is the time to get before God and ask for wisdom? Maybe it's a good time to get some gold, maybe. But if that's your focus, then that's the wrong focus. You go to God. God, give me wisdom on what to do with your money. It's all His, by the way. Show me. Maybe it is, but I don't just believe somebody that comes on that's a movie star that says, hey, I'm this person, and I learned to love these people and then trust these people. You don't know them for anything. I already know that. Doesn't make sense. So learning from these moments, the bad moments, and capitalizing on those, and then doing our good moments is going to bring us to a point where God is pleased with us. Galatians 6, verse 9, it says, let us not be weary in well-doing, for in due season we will reap if we faint not. We're going to go through the trials of this life, but remember how God led the Israelites through, and the murmurs he had wandering for 40 years before they entered the promised land. Well, there's some great parallels there. We're coming up to the promised land. Only God knows when that time is going to be. What are we defining now as our moments before we enter that promised land as well? I'd sure like to go. Even Moses wasn't able to go to the physical one. He'll be in the most important one, for sure. We see those that have their defining moments in Hebrews chapter 11. That's just some of them listed there. Will our names be there as well? These times that we're in now are very important for us to see how we're going to react through all the communications that can be so frustrating sometimes. Let's go to God and make sure we're in our contact with God so we can stir up his spirit within us to have those special defining moments in our life. As we look forward to the Feast of Pentecost, whether we're able to meet or not, let's not forget what we're learning and we're sharing and putting these things into practice now. Let's have some wonderful, special defining moments.